Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature, with over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
All right, this episode of Enough About Me, the 100th episode of Enough About Me. Can you believe it? And I decided to bring my old producer back. He calls in Ben Kitchen, the first producer of the show. We talk about some the old stories, some of the tough guests we had to book, the fight to get the podcast on, the issues with the company while it was going on, the end that we had together, the fallout. Excellent. It was good to talk. I haven't talked to Ben in forever. He was good today. I had a good time. And then Lisa L. Thompson. She's the Vice President of Policy and Research at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Comes on to talk about the letter. I'm sure you saw that that she and a bunch of other people, women's groups, sent to Goodell basically saying the Kraft should be kicked out of the NFL for this. And it is an interesting conversation. This is a really good, I'm actually happy this is the 100th episode. This is a great example of why I love doing this podcast. I've been on and we just bullshit for 10 or 15 minutes about, well, probably maybe a half hour about the old days, some war stories, which I enjoy. And then, a topical battle with Lisa Thompson about this Kraft thing. And, and she goes all in. And I don't think you're getting this anywhere else. And maybe I'm wrong. But it's episode 100 of Enough About Me. I started in February of 2016 in the old EEI studios back at 20 Guest Street with Portnoy, who was in town in a little side booth. And here I am 3 years later in a small booth. I've not made any progress, I guess. But obviously some of my parents slowed it down for a while and I would get frustrated and all the shit that obviously happened the last 6 months. But I loved doing the podcast and I love doing this podcast. I'm getting a lot of great feedback. There are people who are frustrated who say, when are you going to do a radio show and when are you going to do, your old bits, you're going to do that. And that'll all be happening soon enough. But this was a great hour with my old producer, Ben Kitchen, and my new producer, Dave Cullinane, by the way, who booked Lisa Thompson, did a good job, and Mark Moroso, who is kind of becoming part of the family here and sort of an early whack packer as we're building that stable together as well. He's sufficiently stupid enough, I think, in a good way to maybe be part of the family as well. The 100th episode of Enough About Me, and this is one of my favorite ones I've done in a while. This is going to be a good hour, and I dare you to find an hour as good anywhere else. Ben Kitchen, the producer, the original producer, co-creator, really, and force behind Enough. And when my parents were sick, Ben took over, man. He booked. He made sure I was going to be, I'd have to run off to Dana-Farber. I'd have to run off to Mass General. And he'd say, no problem. You want to come back at 3 or 4 o'clock this afternoon? I'm doing my show, but I'll make sure somebody's doing it. Or yeah, I'll come in at 9:30. I know you got to go to infusion today. Or you have a doctor's appointment. And he was unbelievable. And I'm sorry we had a fallout. I told him that at the end of the podcast because I really like Ben. And I really appreciate everything he did for the podcast. He was a huge, huge force behind that. And he's producing Mikey Adams' podcast now. So, out of respect and for Ben, make sure to give that a shot and download it and listen to it. I think it's called Planet Mikey. It's on iTunes, I'm sure. And then Lisa Thompson. So, it is an hour that I really enjoyed this podcast today. I'm sure you can tell. So listen to it. Episode 100 of Enough About Me. Okay, Lisa Thompson is the Vice President of Policy and Research at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Lisa, first of all, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Hope you are too.
I'm pretty good, thank you. So I'm looking, I read this yesterday, sparked my interest. It was you and how many people are listed on this? It's about 4 pages of my printout here.
Yes, we have about nearly 20 survivors and survivor-led organizations, individuals who've survived prostitution and forms of sexual exploitation, like sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. And then we have another more than 60 organizations that work in the anti-sexual exploitation, anti-trafficking space who've also joined on board.
Okay, so this is a letter sent to Commissioner Goodell from all the people you had mentioned, yourself, asking that Robert Kraft banish the NFL banish Robert Kraft from team ownership because men who purchase others for sex inflict amounts of human suffering on those they exploit for sex. So it is your belief that Robert Kraft should not own the Patriots anymore, correct?
Yes, that's right. And I know that for some people that may sound harsh, but I think it's really important that this be, you know, people understand the realities, the very serious harms of engaging in sex buying behavior. For way too long, it's been kind of just, you know, a wink, like, oh, yeah, so-and-so bought sex, or police have oftentimes focused on arresting the individuals who sell sex rather than the buyers. But people who buy sex actually perpetrate massive sexual harm on those that they buy, and they fuel the entire sex industry. They're the reasons why we have strip clubs, massage parlors, online prostitution, women on the street corners, because there are people who basically are sexual narcissists. They think that their sexual needs and wants are more important than others. They don't want to spend the time on building true relationships with people. And so they use money to coerce sex acts from people who then they basically are exercising the right of total control over, because they expect for their sexual demands to be met by those individuals that they buy.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately then prostitution is inherently a form of sexual coercion.
So let's,
Well, no,
that's fine. But so let's just say, and there's no proof yet. Now it's been alleged and people have written it. Now it seems like it may not be the case. Let's just play this out and say that these women were not trafficked. They were not slaves, you know, quote unquote, however you want to call it. And this was a willing adult woman who engaged in a business deal with Robert Kraft for whatever, hand gratification, let's just say, and the $80 was passed.
Mm-hmm.
You think if that is done, and let's throw all the other stuff out for a second. This is just a woman and a man who make who shake hands and make a pact, for argument's sake. You think that the punishment for that should be that Robert Kraft should not be allowed to own an NFL team anymore? That to me seems extraordinarily harsh. Maybe I'm blind to it.
Well, I think people are blind to what's going on in the sex trade and how it's experienced by the individuals who are in the sex trade.
Mm-hmm.
When a person buys another person for sex, they're actually buying a person who's their temporary sex slave, because that individual is expected to do whatever the buyer wants.
Well, see, now, but hold on, Lisa, hold on, because you guys did a good job covering that in this thing. I would say there is, and you may disagree with this, almost a streak of anti-feminism when you say something like that. Because again, I'll say, let's say there's a 40-year-old woman who doesn't want to be a waitress, you know, born in America, raised, educated. She doesn't want to be a waitress anymore or something else. She wants to make more money as an adult who wants to have her own private business as a prostitute. And there are agreements, there are limits, there are things that men can do and can't do with them. I feel like it's not your business to tell that woman what she can and can't do with her body.
I'm not really interested in controlling what women do with their bodies.
Well, sure, but when you said
why do men feel sexually entitled to buy other people?
Well, I don't.
I'm glad it's not my particular fetish.
But you don't understand my point though, which is that of course I'm with you. 10,000,000%. If these women are sex trafficked and we're talking about them living, they're talking about eating on floors and they're sleeping on cots and they can't speak English and they were brought in this country legally, prosecute, do whatever you want, strongest extent of the law. Couldn't agree with you more. It's disgusting. It's abhorrent. I have no use for it. The people who run these businesses are scumbags. 1,000%. But what about the woman who just wants to do this because it's a better way to make a living and she's comfortable doing it? Who are you to tell that woman that she shouldn't use her body that way?
But who are the men to think that they have rights to buy women in the first place?
Well, what if the woman is okay with it? Like, let's say, you know, but so you're not, you, I guess you just want to answer the question. What if the woman who's an adult, like, you know, you don't, I'm guessing that you're pro-choice, correct?
I'm not going to talk about
okay.
my views on abortion.
I'm going to guess that you're pro-choice. I'm just going to make a wild stab in the dark. So let's, pardon the pun, I guess, but let's just say that you're pro-choice, right? You know, so there you don't want a woman's body controlled. You want a woman to make her own decisions. So again, an adult woman, if she wants to use her hand to manipulate a guy or her mouth, who the hell am I to say no to that?
Well, first of all, we're taking a sex act and we're making it into a public act of commerce. So there is a real interest in society in what becomes commerce. And mm-hmm. my argument would be that whether a person is willingly engaging in turning their body into a public sexual commodity
right.
Is something that the society has an interest in. And in, so far in our society, we recognize that as humans, that is not a desirable state of being for individuals, whether they choose it or not. And whether or not a person is harmed for engaging in activity isn't really dependent upon whether a person chooses to engage in it or not. So I would say that there are harms resulting from engaging in that behavior, whether or not, irrespective of the degree of agency involved in making that choice.
Okay, I mean, I just think there's a natural hypocrisy there, but we agree to disagree. So you say the
you're making a hypocrisy because you're assuming that you're assuming a particular stance on abortion.
No, this has nothing to do with this has nothing to do with abortion. It is that, you know, you want women to be, you know, in control of what they, but there are certain women you say, you know what, you shouldn't be allowed to do this with your body. We don't think you should be allowed to do this. I think there's hypocrisy there. We agree
to
disagree.
Why are men allowed to buy women and turn them into public sexual commodities?
Well,
that's,
I mean,
the question,
well,
I wish,
well,
you'd be willing to discuss.
I'm happy to discuss it. I don't think they are. I mean, legally
they're not.
Well, legally they're not, correct? I mean, legally I could not.
Every man who purchases sex from a woman is turning her into a public sexual commodity.
But he's
sexually entitled to do
so. But you said is, why is a man allowed to do it? I mean, technically, I am not legally allowed to do that. Like, the law doesn't allow me to do it. I think the better argument is, why is it not legislated stronger? I think is what you're asking, correct?
Well, it would be nice if it was. I definitely would support it being legislated stronger, but I do think there's an underlying cultural norm which accepts male sexifying behavior as normative, which just basically gives it a wink and a nod and laughs at it. But here we've got an example of a really glaring power disparity between a man who is worth billions of dollars, who has immense power and influence, has, you know, basically limitless resources at his disposal, buying women who are on the margins of society, in this particular case, women who were from a foreign country, more than likely to have very poor English skills, were probably paying off a debt. They were isolated. They were kept on the property 24/7.
We don't know. I mean, we don't know that. But
read the reports.
I don't think
law enforcement and officers are going to be wasting their time on a case like this if they don't have substantial evidence to support their case.
You're right. When I say you, I just mean the statement itself. I'm going to include you in it. The prostitution marketplace encompasses any of the various modes by which prostitution is marketed. Strip clubs, massage parlors, quote, escort services, internet-based prostitution websites, brothels, as well as pimp-facilitated street-level prostitution and pornography. So I guess my question is, do you look at somebody who goes to a strip club in the same way that you look at somebody who goes to a prostitute?
Yes, I do.
So you think strippers are prostitutes?
I think that women who are in strip clubs are being sexually objectified.
Well, but
they're
turned into. But what if they don't? But Lisa, what if that woman doesn't? What if that woman doesn't mind that? What if that woman doesn't? You know, why don't you care about that woman who doesn't mind it? Who happens to maybe like?
I very much care about the women who are involved in the sex.
No, you're not. But
I have dedicated my life.
But what about the woman who works there, who is making a nice living, who doesn't mind the job, who might actually like the job? What about her?
You know, it's interesting you raise that. A lot of times women who get into the sex trade, if you look at the pathways into individuals' involvement in prostitution, a lot of times they're coming from positions of economic desperation,
sure,
which is driving many people into performing in strip clubs or
learning. Well, you wrote about learning disabilities too, which I thought was actually pretty interesting. I hadn't made that connection. I looked it up, and it's obviously you I mean, that I thought was an interesting thing as well.
You oftentimes also have histories of childhood sexual abuse.
Sure.
So really there's a sense in which a lot of women who get involved in the sex trade are reenacting the very types of abuse and harm that they've already experienced,
sure,
as children. And oftentimes, I don't know how many survivors I've met who over time, you know, have said, well, you know, I was being abused by my dad or my stepdad or my brother or whomever. And it just like finally it occurred to me, well, maybe I should just get paid for what's already been happening to me.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt that happens.
Of most individuals who become ensnared within the commercial sex trade. It is not a highway to empowerment. It's actually the raw manifestation of just the opposite of the extreme sexualization, abuse, and vulnerability of women who are then being basically consumed by the men who buy them and profited off of by the individuals who run these sexually oriented businesses.
So I guess my question would be then, just from the you want Kraft to be banished from the NFL, and if you think it's the same thing, if a player goes into a strip club or an owner goes into a strip club, by your definition, that person should also be banished from the NFL, correct?
Well, I think the NFL, by their own personal conduct policy, states that they hold owners to a higher standard.
Okay, so let's
do players.
So let's say,
I think in Mr. Kraft's case, given the nature of the establishment he was involved in, the sexual servitude of the women that he was purchasing. I mean, if you're in a state of sex trafficking, you're buying women who don't have any meaningful right to refuse consent. And that, whether you recognize it or not, they are experiencing your sexual engagement with them as rape. So for them, it's an experience of sexual rape.
So
I think the circumstances of who he was buying aggravates the circumstances to such an extent that he should be banished.
So you think Robert Kraft is a rapist?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess my question would be to that. What if, and there's been, by the way, there's been no actual proof yet that this is a sex trafficking ring. Let's say that we find out that it's not, and he just went to a massage parlor, made a business transaction with a woman, got a hand job, let's say, okay, and left. Do you think at that point, if there's no sex trafficking proved, do you think at that point he should lose ownership?
I think he at least should have some severe penalties. There should be a substantial fine. And in fact, we actually said in our letter that, you know, we expect that the NFL will follow through their procedure, that they'll undertake an investigation, that given the nature of the allegations involved and that, you know, whatever evidence that the NFL collects, that at a minimum, we think there should be a 6-game suspension. But assuming that the law enforcement case, stands on its merits and that he, you know, does say that he's guilty, then I think banishment is definitely in order.
How about this? Let's just say it happened in Nevada where it's legal. Does that change your thought process at all?
No, it's interesting you raise that. Our organization, the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, has actually placed the state of Nevada on our Dirty Dozen list, which is a list that names mainstream contributors to the normalization of sexual exploitation. And we've named Nevada to that list because of the very detrimental impacts that legalization of the sex trade has had on the entire country by creating like this mecca or this basically a place that exhibits extreme market forces, basically sucking in women and girls into a gigantic sex trade. That definitely is individual. There's not enough individuals to meet the demand, and you have a lot of trafficking, you have a lot of exploitation of people in the sex trade there. So to me, whether it's legal or not doesn't change the underlying realities of what's happening.
I guess I would just ask this, and I appreciate you coming on and battling here, and I think, you know, I think you are, at the end of the day, fighting for what is good. And I do think all the examples you give, whether it's, you know, these women in poor economic states, or these women who are sexually abused, these women with learning disabilities, or these women who have been in terrible marriages, that's where they wind up. I guess my question would be, and I just return to it, do you think it's possible, and maybe you don't, that there's just a woman who is, you know, balanced and was raised okay, who looks at this and says it's a better financial life for me to be a stripper than to be a waitress or to work at Barnes & Noble, and she does it, and she goes home, and she's comfortable and happy with her life? Do you think that's possible?
I definitely think that there are women who are, you know, adults who have a more degree of agency than others. I mean, it's important to recognize that those who get involved in the sex trade, that their degree of agency exists on a continuum, and that the women who have the most agency in their involvement typically have more privilege, more opportunity than other people. But if you look around the world, the vast majority of people involved in the sex trade are actually not these empowered individuals. And boy, am I sorry about the noise right now.
That's okay. That's okay.
There's nothing I can do about it.
That's okay. No, it doesn't sound bad. Go ahead.
At any rate, now I've kind of lost my train of thought where we were discussing.
Well, no, I think you...
They represent a very small minority of the overall individuals who comprise or who are used by the sex trade. And even if they choose something like that. That is not exclusive to them being harmed. So whether or not, for instance, when the whole Me Too movement started mm-hmm. happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
You had a lot of people who suddenly thought back on previous experiences that they had had as, I don't know, say young people in college or women in the workplace. And they're like, wow, I never really thought of that experience or that encounter I had with XYZ individual as sexual harassment
yeah.
or sexual assault.
Sure.
But now, stepping back, I can see that. And I think that this actually happens to many individuals who exit the sex trade, that while they're in it, a lot of times the way that they're actually coping with the demands of what's being demanded of them while they're in the trade is they dissociate. You can read the research literature on this. It talks about how they disassociate and take their kind of minds out of their bodies in order to be able to just stand the fact of all these men ogling them, harassing them, pinching them, doing all these things to them when they're in the clubs. It's very psychologically demanding on them to be able to do this, to withstand it. And initially there might be a sense of empowerment and esteem because, these men are wanting me, or I'm undesirable, or I'm sexy. But as you look, as they continue with involvement in, say, stripping, a lot of them end up turning to substances to help them with the dissociative process that they typically go in to be able to perform, and they can't sustain it. So then they turn to alcohol, or in some cases drugs, in order to continue in the trade. And so I think, irrespective of whether or not a person chooses it, doesn't mean that it can't also be harmful.
Let me ask you, so, I mean, you said you thought Robert Kraft was guilty of rape. I don't agree with that, but I would say, I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this. Is Robert Kraft going into a massage parlor and a woman using her hand or whatever on him the same in your mind as a woman walking down the street, a guy grabbing her, pinning her down, beating her, and forcing himself inside her in the traditional?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that question. That's a neat question. I think what the difference is when a person attacks a person, a man attacks a woman on the street, he's perpetrating the violence himself. But when you have establishments like the Asian Orchids or whatever the
yes,
place
yep,
is called,
Orchids of Asia,
okay,
yeah. mm-hmm.
What is happening is other individuals are taking care of the violence intimidation so that Robert Kraft doesn't have to. They take care of finding vulnerable women. They are the ones who make sure the women comply so that he doesn't have to jump out of a bush to get a woman.
But you're right. It's a little more nuanced, I suppose. But the clear answer to my question is no, right? I mean, it's not the same as pinning a woman down.
I'm not saying. Yeah, then the difference is he's contracting it out.
But also, I would also say, and this is not a defense for a billionaire, but I believe that Robert Kraft, when he walked in there, did not walk in there and thinking these women are slaves. I think he walked in there and said, I'm going to get sexual gratification. I mean, whether that's, I'm not even sure that's defense, but I do think that was his thought process.
Well, I'm sure that's his process, but it doesn't mean that the women who were there
agreed.
He didn't contract out to somebody else.
Correct.
The trouble of having it be convenient for him him a hand job or stimulate him orally or whatever.
Right. Agreed. If it was in fact sex trafficking, that's no excuse. I guess my point is that I don't know. I hate to use the term traditional rape, but when I was a kid and growing up, and we didn't think of stuff like this. When you thought of rape, you thought of a movie like The Accused or something, where it was brutal and physical and ugly and bloody. And now things are changing. I do think in a weird way, this opened a lot of people's eyes to Jesus. This is going on a lot. In a weird way, this Kraft arrest is going to be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is really shining the light on where the light needs to be shined, and that is on the men who buy sex. These are men who are sexual narcissists who think that they are entitled to get what they want sexually whenever they want it, as long as they got a few bucks in their pocket. And it's their behavior which fuels vast amounts of sexual harm to individuals who are for various reasons involved in the sex trade, or the people who are trafficked into it. And if it weren't for them, there wouldn't be sex trafficking. End of story.
But you, you are not naive. I don't think you seem like a smart person. You know the sex business is never, ever, 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 ever going away, right?
Oh, I mean,
it's as old as it's as old as time. Look, guys are wired the way they're wired. I mean, we know all. You know, most registered sexual offenders, 99% whatever, are men. The pornography industry is all geared toward men. Prostitution, all geared toward men. Like, there's something.
Hey, look, I have a vision of a world free from sexual exploitation. It may not happen in my lifetime, but
I'm not going to give up on it.
But, you know, why would you could have made the same argument about, say, the transatlantic slave trade? You know, people thought, oh, there's always been.
Well, do you think are you comparing a stripper to an actual slave?
No.
It's also, by the way, an
systematic form of exploitation that people never thought would be ended. I'm using that as an analogy how I view the sex trade.
Reasonable. But I would say also, we know this is, the pornography, you would know better than me, I'm sure, doing your research. The pornography industry is brings in how much a year to, probably, what, $10 billion?
I couldn't.
Right,
say
but I mean, it's astronomical, right? I mean, it's it seems difficult then. So, what is the, first of all, I appreciate you coming on. Let me wrap up with this. What is your, so let's say Goodell just essentially ignores this letter, right? Just says whatever and throws it. Is there a next step? Do you guys plan on pressuring advertisers or what is the move here?
Well, I don't know. We haven't figured out what would be our next step in terms of, say, the NFL. Mm-hmm. But I do think as a movement that we are very much focusing our attention on what we call the demand, mm-hmm. the men who buy other human beings for sex. We see them as a linchpin on which vast amounts of sexual exploitation and harm all spins, that they're the fulcrum on which it's all happening, and that we want to use in all kinds of ways, work to make it no longer a social norm where men can buy sex and people just think it's funny or a joke, or men think they're just entitled to do that.
Okay, Lisa Thompson, Vice President of Policy and Research at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. You can follow her at Lisa, what is it, at Lisa, look at the Twitter account here.
Oh, Twitter.
Are you on it or no? Is it even worth it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I don't get on it very, to be honest, I'm not on it a lot. I'm not the most social media savvy person
okay.
on our team.
All right, well, good enough. So, Lisa, I appreciate you coming on and answering all the questions. I do appreciate that. Thanks
Thank
so much.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You too.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
When was the last time we spoke, producer of the original Enough About Me, Kirk Minahan Show, co-creator, Ben Kitchen? When's the last time we actually spoke?
Other than a quick text exchange about a year ago, we haven't spoke since I left the station.
Well, text exchange, not speaking. I mean, when was the last time we conversed conversationally as people do?
Right before I left the station.
Yeah, so you just disappeared. You just went away.
Yeah, it's the best way to do it.
It really is. Really is.
Yeah, once you're just off into the ether and no one bothers you and no one talks to you about the stupid bullshit that's going on, it feels so much greater. You have this just freedom from it.
We'll get to the podcast and your role in it, which I talked about yesterday, which was enormous, in your exit with me, our fallout. But why did you leave the station?
I didn't like really what was going on. I wasn't making enough money doing what I was doing. There was more money to be made outside of there than there was inside of there. And then the biggest thing, you knew, I had talked to you about a year before I left that I wasn't very long for that place.
Right.
And once I found out a producer for a morning show that had zero fucking ratings at a shitty station in our cluster was making $100,000 as the producer, I was like, man, fuck this.
Oh, is that true? What show is that? Is that true?
Yeah.
What show is that? It's all over now.
Kim Kerrigan show, the Boston whatever on RKO, their morning show.
Oh, Dave Cullinane?
Yeah, I was told he was making $100,000. I didn't hear it from him, but I was told from, you know, the boss at the station at the time, and I was like, you know what? You're paying the rest of us at EEI, and we actually make money and get ratings for you, and you're paying us. Some of us are barely making more than fucking half. Most are making like a third of what this guy's making.
So,
nah, I'm good.
So the fallout, the fight that happened with me and Holly and you, that didn't play a role in it?
Not really. I was frustrated with you that, you know, your decision affected my money.
My decision affected your money.
What's that?
What do you mean? I don't even remember. I'm sure you're right, but what do you mean?
Well, no, you got mad and you fired me from the show.
Yeah, but you knew. Hold on. You knew that was a Kirk Minahan firing. Like, I would have brought you back like a week later. That wasn't like You know, you dealt with me enough to know that wasn't real.
I guess I didn't at the time. I probably should have. I was just, you know, we were hot about the situation. We're talking about what had happened. You text me saying, I'm all set. Like, okay.
Yeah, but you weren't like...
I guess I didn't think of it at the time.
This guy's a fucking...
Before you were doing the whole banning... Like, maybe it wasn't before you were doing the whole banning Reamer and stuff like that and then bringing him back eventually. But I don't think I realized it at the time.
That was good. That was a good radio segment, though, that day and whatever Jake and Joe's. That was entertaining.
Well, that was part of my problem, why I was mad about it. I was like, this is a perfect opportunity to continue this on the podcast. Why aren't we taking advantage of it?
Yeah, Holly wasn't playful either, though. Like, you know, I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, I don't know.
Well, there was some serious shit going on there. Serious feelings being hurt.
Yes, there certainly. I saw Holly at the Super Bowl this year in Atlanta. And I thought, you know how I am. Like, I just think, okay, well, we had our fight and whatever. He's a good guy. Like, I think he knows that I like, you know. I saw him and he wanted fucking no part of me. None. Like, no hello, nothing. I was like, oh, shit, Jesus, this is real still. What the fuck?
Everyone's different, you know. You said some things about him that probably did not sit very well. Everyone's different. Everyone treats it differently. I'm kind of more along the lines of what you are in terms of, you say some shit, we'll get over it. It's perfectly fine after a while.
Although
everyone's like that. Not everyone can deal with that. Not everyone wants to deal with that.
What is your? Do you stay in contact with anybody at the station or no?
Currently at the station,
no. Yes. Jeez, what was that? Oh, you talked to like Andy or whatever.
Yeah, I talked to Andy. I mean,
what happened to him? He's another guy who just left and like left, right?
Yeah, so did Patty. You know,
true.
Most people that leave kind of just leave. There's very few people that hang on to it. You know, I look at someone like Chach. He seems to hang on to it forever.
Yeah, it becomes a disease. It does. Yes. It just becomes
the only way to get rid of that disease is to try your best to forget about it. And it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing. It's that place. It's that culture there for some reason. It pre-existed me. It pre-existed you. The place is just fucked up. It has this weird vibe about it where everyone just fucking hates each other.
Yes, and I suppose I contributed to that in some extent.
You absolutely did.
But, you know, but having worked with me, I think you know that, A, I care what I care most about is doing good radio or a good podcast. Like, if the other stuff happens, it happens. Now, that may be the reason why I went from hosting number one morning show maybe in America to doing a podcast in the Mix 104.1 producer booth. but you know, were you surprised at my downfall?
Yes and no. I wasn't surprised because the climate was heading in that direction where it was too easy for you to be either scapegoated or just ran out of the situation where companies just don't want to deal with it. Was I surprised because you had the numbers to kind of back it up? Yeah, a little bit, because sometimes these companies go, well, fuck it, we're getting what we want out of it. We'll just kind of ride the wave. But considering what's going on in the country, not really that surprised.
So I'm trying to remember. So this is now about three. So this is the 100th episode, by the way, enough about me. And as I said, you're the... I'll call you the...
Congratulations.
Congratulations to you as well, by the way, as the co-creator.
Thank you.
What's that?
I said thank you.
No problem. Well, I'm trying to go... So it was like the end of 15. We started in February 16 when I think I went to you, right? Or you went... I shouldn't even say that. I don't remember how it began. But I remember you were sort of in charge of podcasts at the stations, kind of... tangentially, and I was getting ready to do my thing. I had just done this new deal. I want to do the podcast. I don't remember, maybe you do, maybe you don't, who reached out to who. I mean, we talked before that, obviously. We were friends,
yeah,
but I don't remember.
We talked fairly regularly. So I remember it as like 8 months before I ended up doing the podcast with you, I had went to the company and kind of pitched a podcast system that the host
I remember this,
podcasts to add revenue to the company, and then nothing ever really happened with it. I was just kind of stuck with, hey, just produce up these podcasts, do whatever. Like, okay. Then I think Tim Murphy or maybe Kevin Graham came to me, and then you called me. You guys had already had the ball rolling. I wasn't involved with the first initial process.
Okay.
So after that, because you had already booked Portnoy before I got involved.
Mm-hmm. That's it? That's all you have to say on it? That's it?
Well, like I said.
Just fucking talk. Just expand your thoughts, would you please?
What's that?
Just keep talking.
Can't get my thoughts?
Yes.
So you guys were already in the process. I was brought in after you guys had already started the ball rolling. You had already booked Portnoy. You might have already even recorded Portnoy.
Oh, is that right? See, I thought you were there. Oh, so I brought you in after that. Okay, okay.
You brought me in after you had recorded Portnoy, and then I had to sit down and edit it, and I had to go through the whole process of what can we say and what can't we say. Okay, edit it down so it's appropriate, and I didn't edit a fucking thing. I left everything in there just to say
right,
it's not
right,
that bad.
Right, I remember that. Right. Okay. Now
they were initially like, "Oh, you can, you know, we don't really like the Portnoy saying the word cunt." So what? It's a podcast,
right?
Most people will be fine with it.
Yes. Well, and I think that's obviously still a battle I have today. But I do think, you know, what I thought was interesting was, first of all, you talk about pitching 8 months ago, but I feel like throughout the, and we started out, our show started out number one in iTunes and always did really well, but I never felt while I was still at EEI and while we were still doing it together, I don't think anybody in that building, other than me, you, maybe one or two other people, Tim Murphy, I would say for sure, I don't think anybody could really get their heads around what it was, like why it was important, and not only what it was, but what it could be if they friggin' marketed it correctly.
Well, I mean, that's what you're going to deal with every single radio station. They're going to have pushback against this thing, and you're dealing with older people at these radio stations that don't understand the competition that's coming around. They didn't understand podcasting. They're so late to the game when your neighbor at WGBH is producing huge podcasts that are doing great numbers and bringing in revenue. They were just late to the game. They didn't get it. They didn't care either. The thing that drives me bananas is how long it took them to even get the thing sold.
That was crazy. I mean, you look at the, like, we would sit there, you and I, and I mean, we're essentially just doing what we used to do on the phone or in the office, bitching. I mean, you look at it, and the first one was number one because of Portnoy, understood. But it was always, and there were certain other ones that got in the top 10 and were always up there. And you look at these other ones, and it was all national stuff. And you had one local radio show that clearly had a loyal fan base that they could, you know, and they didn't, you're right, I think they purposely didn't want to sell it. Because they were, it was almost in their minds thought it was competition, which if they really use their heads, they'd say it's not. Why don't we look big picture? But they weren't capable or maybe just didn't want to do that.
They didn't see the possibility of true additional revenue for the company. So the salespeople weren't directed to even try and sell it for months.
I know,
how long
right,
did it take for Milton's right, to come on board?
Oh, forever. I mean, we'd be sitting, yeah, we'd, you know, we'd do the occasional, you know, we'd do all the ones that, you know, what's the one where they send the food with boxes to your house or, you know, whatever.
Oh, like HelloFresh.
Yeah. You know,
for mattress.
Which
but
are,
those
which
are from the company
right,
you pay.
Correct.
Once you hit a threshold, they just start dumping spots at you based on your demographics and your numbers. That's,
right.
You know, like, that's what I do now.
Right. So you'd sit there and you'd say, well, I don't, you know. And there was a battle that we fought really all the way through because they don't have, and I feel like they still don't have, by the way, dedicated salespeople for podcasts, and I know you're working a podcast. Obviously, I have one. It's all I listen to. I mean, I'll be honest. I don't listen to sports talk radio. So, I mean, I listen to podcasts. Guys my age and down, you're younger than me. That's what we listen to now. I mean, I know, you know, yeah. I mean, I understand I work for Entercom and there's a lot of radio stations, but that's what people listen to, and it's not, you know, it's not going to change. Put it this way. It's moving, and it's not going to flip.
No, it's not going to flip. It's going to continue to head in this direction. The only way I see it possibly changing in the favor of radio is if the FCC kind of loosens up some of its regulations on language.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean,
but
think about it.
Right.
You but listen to a podcast, that's more relating to you and your personal life, how you speak with your friends.
True.
Than the kind of bullshit you hear on the radio.
No question. But I also do think, like, it's also a talent issue, too, though. The radio hosts that are in there right now are not going to do 12 hours dedicated on a murder or a trial. I mean, you know what I mean? It's just, I think until you get a complete cleanse or flip or whatever, it's not going to change.
No, it's not going to change. They're slave to the individual day. What are we doing today?
Right, Mookie Betts' contract I just, you know, and that's, as you know, I mean, we talked about it. I just wasn't interested in doing that anymore. And if people want to do that and they're passionate about it, that's totally fine by me. I just don't, well, I shouldn't say that. I'll make fun of them. But I don't know. Who was the white whale we never landed for a guest? Who was the guy, who was the person I bitched about the most?
Well, I mean, you wanted Stern. That was the not Stern, Springsteen, especially when he was in town at Gillette, and we just couldn't make it happen.
Yeah, that seemed like a tough. But I, like, maybe Maybe you'll disagree with this. I don't think, and that wasn't really like your boss. You were working for the afternoon show, who, by the way, hated me. I hated them while you were working for me, which is an interesting dynamic. But
yeah, made it fun for me.
A lot of fun for you. But and you can tell me, but I don't think I was a slave driving boss for you. I think I respected that you had 50 other things going on.
Yeah, and it wasn't an issue. The only issue would sometimes be, can I get a hold of you to get an answer on this while I'm, while the iron's hot.
Right.
And then you were starting to go through the shit with your parents, and I was just like, I'm not going to bother him.
Something,
and if he's available, he's available, but I can't. He's going through serious shit here that's more important than this fucking podcast, so.
Right.
I mean, that was frustrating to try and deal with, but it was completely understandable. But no, there was never an issue with you pushing too hard for something or you not understanding that sometimes when you're recording, I have to leave for a conference call.
Right.
It wasn't just that I was doing the afternoon show. I had to also go to these stupid fucking meetings as an executive producer.
Right. That happened in the life of it as well. What I like, though, is you understood from the start, like, what I wanted for the show, what the plan was, which is just shit I wanted to talk about. We still deal with, like, we'll get emails from people say, hey, does Kirk want to talk to, friggin' Nolan Ryan? Or does, it's like, no. There's a book I read or a documentary I saw or a fucking whatever, an issue that I want to get into, and you knew that, and you'd either come up with ideas or you'd chase them down, whether it was whoever. Artie Lang, who was, I'm guessing, difficult to get on, or, whoever it was.
Yeah, there were some interesting ones that were a little difficult to get on, but we also had a slight philosophical difference where I was looking at certain things like, if I could get the definitive Drew Bledsoe interview with him, that's a great promotion for this. People will start to tune in simply because they like Drew Bledsoe, and there's people out there that don't know who Kirk is yet. This is a great way to introduce those people to him.
Right.
And you weren't quite as interested in doing that, and I was kind of strong about that, but that was the only philosophical difference we really had.
How did you book Lenny Dykstra?
Through the book.
Oh, through the publishing. Okay.
Sent me an email, and we went back and forth, and we figured it out, and then we had fireworks.
How soon after that interview did they contact you, or did they?
I don't know if they did contact me after that or not. I don't think they ever did.
Oh, they didn't. How long was that interview?
But I booked other people through the publicist.
After?
Same publicist. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have a problem. They knew Lenny was a psychopath.
How long was that interview? Like 4 minutes?
I think the interview was about 6 minutes. The entire podcast was like maybe 18, with you just kind of going off afterwards. I haven't listened to it in a long time.
I haven't either.
That was absolutely the best episode.
Yeah, I like that one. I like the Kareem one as well.
That I thought it could have been better. He was going to.
But we did the Anatomy of a Bad Podcast. Remember where we almost did like a director's cut of the shitty podcast and why it was so bad.
That was the one I was getting texts from people, random people, saying that was the coolest podcast I've ever listened to.
It was just a good idea. I don't know if it was yours or mine. We were just like, let's just talk about, this is a disaster, as opposed to saying, hey, it was great. We had Kareem on. It was a lot of fun. Be like, well, our audience doesn't fucking believe that. Like, let's be honest,
No, that was your idea. That was all your idea. I didn't come up with that. It was a good idea. It was interesting. It was fun. And it made that podcast 10 times better than what it would have been if it was just a straight interview.
I also think, and you understood this as well, while I was still at the station, I got more, and I think, I remember Holly telling me this too, he got more feedback from that podcast than anything else he had done in a while. If we did it right, and I thought all the ones with the guys at the station were really good, it was a great inner promotional tool that I wish wasn't our, I don't really think it was our fault. I wish the other shows and we had used better, because it painted Dale. It painted Holly. You had Holly talking about his mom, which was great. You had Dale talking about getting I just felt like that was a much... I don't think the station handled that correctly.
No, they don't know how to do promotion. They don't really know how to do marketing very well. It's funny. Those were actually some of the toughest interviews to book.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
The people that were in-house that could do it at any time were the toughest to book, and I had to work on convincing them for like a month at a time just to get them to do it.
Well, particularly Holly, right? I know he had told me that he just didn't want to do it.
Yeah, he didn't really want to do it. I convinced him to finally do it, and I thought it came out well. Dale didn't really want to do it very much either, but I think he kind of saw that it was helping other people out too, and he's like, yeah, whatever. And then we had Keith on when he first came in.
We had Keith on when he first came in, and he was good. We had a good conversation, and I think it's the last time we ever spoke.
And you were friends ever since.
You've been pals ever since. What, do you have any regrets or no?
I regret never being able to land Brandy Love, even though we were going back and forth time and time again.
Well, you got in this weird, I remember you telling me you got in this weird, like, rabbit hole vortex of strange emails, and is that right?
Phone call, random phone calls while I'm at work from her.
Right.
I think she wanted me to join her swinger business.
Yes. I think you would have done well on that.
I regret the Lisa Ann interview didn't work out.
Oh, fuck. I totally forgot about that. That's a great one.
She didn't want to talk porn. She only wanted to talk fantasy football. Bitch, you're known for taking humongous cocks. Like, that's what we want to talk about.
If you hadn't mentioned that, I would have. So I remember you brought me, you booked it, right? Like,
yeah.
And it was a good idea because she had fucking like a million Twitter followers, right, or whatever. And
yeah, she had a show at Sirius,
right?
Radio.
And we were gonna.
Everyone knows who she is,
right? We weren't gonna sit there. We were gonna sort of blend. I tried to explain to her. I think like we're trying to do both here. Like it's not, you know, we're not gonna sit here and talk about porn the whole time. But it's sort of, you know, if Terry Hatcher had a fantasy football show, we'd talk about fucking Desperate Housewives for a minute, and then we get to the other stuff. You know, like that.
I thought you were gonna talk about Superman, though.
Yeah, Lois and Clark. You know what I mean? But like, you can't just say, "Hey, here's Lisa Ann. Lisa, who should I start a running back this week?" It's just fucking stupid.
Well, it's ignorance on her part. We all know you from one thing, porn.
Right.
Why don't you want to talk about the thing that made you famous?
Yeah, and it's not like
got you these other opportunities. And what did you do? Like 6 months later, you went back to porn.
Yeah, we had some. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, she looks awful.
That's rough.
Surgery, not her friend.
We had a couple that we wound up just bagging, remember?
There was a couple of authors we just absolute bagged.
Gammons.
Like it might be an interesting concept. And it just
Who was it?
I don't remember their names.
We had Gammons, remember?
Gammons was early, and then you were like, maybe we'll repurpose this for something.
Yeah, it was just...
And we just never did because it wasn't worth it.
It was odd. You're right. We had a couple of authors that we used. It was actually a guy who... And we never ran it, and we should have because the book was pretty good. It was that guy... We should have run it. If we had it, I'd run it now even. The guy who wrote the...
Racklin?
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
That was one of those weird ones where you were super into it, and I had no context, no idea. But the story... Like, I thought it was going to suck because the kid just... He was a mouse. He barely talked.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. He was really quiet.
Right.
But
that's
the
what
story
was
weirdly compelling.
The book is great, and I would like to, you know. But yes, but that, you know me too. I'd get in the mood, and I'd be like, "Fuck it, don't run it." And like, you know, there was all that. So what is Ben Kitchen doing today, March 20th, 2019?
Well, I do the podcast with Mikey, the Planet Mikey podcast, which is fun. And thanks to the morning show for giving us free publicity.
I heard about that.
Whew, bunch of brain surgeons. And I do a lot of content creation for a marijuana marketing company.
Oh, God. What a marriage that is. What a perfect marriage that is.
It couldn't be more boring, though.
It's boring?
It's like doing beer content. It's the same thing.
So what are you looking to do?
No one really cares. What am I looking to do?
Yeah.
Outside of this, I'm just looking to continue to do projects like this, freelance, have fun, not have to worry about being in the same place every single day that I don't really want to be at.
Why didn't you apply for the producer job for the Kirk Minahan show?
What are you paying?
No, it's done. We're hired. We already hired somebody. I'm saying, why didn't you apply at the time?
I don't really want to produce.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm doing stuff on radio or in podcasting, I want to be on air. That's the whole reason I got into the business. I backed into producing, and it hurt what I wanted to do in the business to begin with. So I don't really want to go back to that role that I didn't enjoy after 10 years of doing it anyway.
I listened to some of that Mikey one with Chad Finn the other day. I actually texted you about it. Mikey is still, man, is he still, is he that angry still?
He's got a little bit of salt. I like making fun of him for it.
I mean, does he really think that I got, like, I went into some executive's office and got, like, people fired and stuff?
That you'll have to talk to him about.
I mean, I will cop completely to setting, like, walking Mutt through that thing when he had the fight with him. Obviously, I have my fingerprints all over it. Mutt's not capable of those. I mean, I was essentially like...
As we've learned.
That's true.
I love Mutt, but...
Oh, we all love Mutt. Everyone, by the way, everyone
not
says...
good at this fighting part.
Everyone starts a sentence with, I love Mutt. We can move on. We all love Mutt. But I was literally texting him lines, like, while it was, you know, it was like watching, you know, friggin' broadcast news or something. But Mikey...
Well, the behind the scenes of that whole thing was, Patty was on the board. He said, fuck this, I'm not dealing with it, walks out.
Oh, really?
And then all of a sudden, we're standing in there. I'm calling Kevin Graham, like, what do you want to do about this? He had no fucking clue. The program director had no clue that two of his on-air talents were ready to kill each other on air. It's like, they better stop doing this right now.
Yeah, God forbid. Who wants to hear that, right?
Okay.
I mean, you know, let's get that. Let's get that
competence level I was dealing with.
Let's get that freaking guy from The Sopranos on, or the, you know, guy who sells, you know, freaking T-shirts. So, Mikey, so the podcast of Mikey is on what, once a week?
Yeah, once a week. We drop Thursdays.
Where do you get? What's it called?
It's called The Planet Mikey Show. Keep it simple. Keep it easy.
Planet Mikey Show.
Done.
Mikey prepared as always?
Always prepared. Writes his notes on paper towels.
Who's on next week?
Mistress Carrie's coming in next week, and then next week. I believe Mike wants to react to what Mutt and Reamer and Callahan said the other day.
Well, I am throwing my hat. Anytime I reach out to Mikey earlier in the week, he didn't answer my call. Anytime you guys want to have me on, I'm more than happy to come on and spar with Mikey. I owe him that, at least.
I'm willing to take you up on it.
Sure. Where do you guys tape it?
In Sudbury. So it's not that far away.
No, I can do that. Yeah. Let me know if you want me on. So
I'm game.
Okay. So the co-creator, the MVP of the Enough About Me first 100 episodes. You produced probably, what, 70 of them, 60 of them?
Probably closer to 50. You did a bunch after I left. You rattled through a shitload of mailbags after I left.
Yeah, that's literally called, like, I can't get a fucking guest. Nobody wants to be on with me. Let's answer questions about how great I am for 30 minutes.
That's what you got left.
Pontificate. What was the worst one that we did? What was the worst podcast? What's the worst episode we did? You know I love shit like that.
There was a mailbag with Mutt that was really painful.
Oh, that was a shit burger. Oh, my God, was that bad. But that's Mutt's fault. That's not our fault.
That's both of your faults. You chose to have him in there.
That's true. I chose to have him as my friend.
You got to own that decision.
Look how that led me. I'm trying to think of the best one we did.
I really liked the Kevin McHale one.
That was a good one. Although, that was a pretty good one. Also, had Kate and Harry in there, which I liked.
But I liked McHale being in there because you were a huge fan of that Celtics team. Who's not a huge fan of
right.
that Celtics team?
That was a pretty good one.
You could have an interesting conversation with him.
It was so reliant, you know, as you know, it's so reliant on the, like, you could tell right away, especially the ones you don't know, like, if they're, you know, even like a Duchovny, he was a pretty good sport, you know? Like, if they were Artie, my favorite one's Artie, just because, you know, it was, I love him, but, like, you know, you could tell right away if they're going to be, you know, dicks or assholes, or they understand that they're on the joke, they're trying to promote. You know, I would say, as a huge Springsteen fan, I wanted to have Gary Talon on just because. I would say it's probably not the Mount Rushmore of good podcasts. That probably wasn't one of our
tough one because I had no context for it either as a listener.
Right, but I didn't care.
To go back to your earlier question about the white whale, Fred Norris.
Oh, Fred Norris, you're right. Yeah, the Howard.
That was the one I was trying really hard for, but could never figure out.
Yeah, I can't remember a time he was ever interviewed. You know that?
I've never heard.
I wonder if he's just like, he's probably smart. He's like, why even, like, what's the point? If I say something wrong, like, what's the point? I'm trying to get Stuttering John on right now.
$5 million a year salary.
True. I'm trying to get Stuttering John on right now because he went off on Stern. Do you see this whole thing with the Wendy Williams and Stern had to take his audio down on Sirius? I'm trying to get him on right now, but that would get.
You know, he'll have fun ripping the shit out of Stern.
True.
For 30 minutes.
And we did have Artie and Jackie on, so we did pretty well.
Jackie was funny in terms of trying to book. No, I don't want to do it. All right, can you call me in 10 minutes?
Oh, is that what it was?
Yes.
Who was the biggest asshole you dealt with?
Well, outside of Lenny.
Outside of who?
Jackie was an asshole.
You say Lenny?
I met him at a comedy show. I went all the way to the comedy show to try and book him.
Right.
And he was just an asshole there, but I followed up anyway because it was like, fuck it, I want him on. And he was a pain in the ass to deal with.
Did you say Lenny or no, other than Jackie?
No, Jack. Lenny's the nicest guy.
That's what I thought. I thought you said Lenny. I was like, what? That actually was a pretty good one, too.
Yeah, well, that was one of those fun ones where I couldn't be in the studio for. And, you know, you do your mic checks and everyone sounds good. I walk out of the studio and then he decides to fucking whisper.
That's true. You know what else was like? That was Wolfie. Remember how bad he sounded?
Yeah, because you'd think a guy who was in radio for 25 years would know how to talk into a microphone instead of leaning all the way back in his chair.
Well, he also hired Mike Salk. So, you know, we don't need to, you know, talk about somebody with a high level of intelligence.
That's what you should get on your new show, right there.
Oh, Mike Salk?
Mike Salk.
Oh, fuck yeah. I would do that. I don't think... He doesn't strike me as particularly playful. I could be wrong.
No, and he might still think you're an anti-Semite.
I remember that. Didn't he go to management and say that Jerry and I are anti-Semitic?
He said it to me, and I was like, they like me. I'm Jewish.
No, you know what? I'm anti-shit radio. That's what I was anti, and you fucking... You were the friggin', you know, whatever. fucking Michael Jordan of shit radio. All right, I got to go tape another one. So let me tell you something. I thank you for your service. I'm sorry that we have fallen out of favor. I would like that to end if you'd like to. If not, that's fine. I love you. I appreciate the help you gave me. And give Mikey a hug for me. And I'll come on anytime.
I'll give him a hug and kiss for you and pass that message along.
All right, I'll talk to you soon. I am eternally grateful for helping me with this stuff. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, bud. I appreciate it. And it was fun while it lasted.
Okay, and you love me too.
I love you too.
All right, goodbye.